Welcome to PR After Hours, your weekly cocktail of news and interviews with leading thinkers in PR, marketing, and business. So pull up a chair in our virtual lounge. Your host, Alex Greenwood, will be right back after this.
Why do people listen to PR After Hours? Don't take my word for it. Listen to Joel Freund, CEO of Fluax Media.
I'm going on a lot of podcasts, and your podcast, the conversation with you is just so authentic and so real that I actually enjoy it. I don't even feel like it's a podcast.
Follow us now wherever you get your podcasts, or visit PRAfterHours.com and get on our subscription list so you never miss an episode. Popular topic with listeners: what's wrong with the way most B2B tech companies and agencies approach content marketing? And I hear it from people just like looking at other agencies or looking at other brands, or they're saying it to me. They're pulling their hair out going, Alex, what am I doing wrong here? That's why I'm really excited to have today's guest. All right, Joe Zappa. His experience spans across content marketing, journalism, and academia. He's the brain behind Sharp Pen Media, which emphasizes narrative building, editorial planning, and get this, effective content creation. Moreover, he served as the editor for the MarTech pub Street Fight for a good stretch. And with his educational background from Brown and Cornell, I couldn't get in. With his educational background from those two wonderful schools, Joe brings a unique blend of insights to the table about what we can all do better with our content marketing, as well as the elephant in the room, AI. Joe Zappa, welcome to the virtual lounge.
Hey, Alex, thanks so much for having me on and singing my prestigious praises.
You've got some prestigious praises and you've got some good phrasing. You're a writer. I could tell you're a writer. You're a journalist.
I do my best.
Yeah. All right, man. Look, can we just go to the elephant in the room here, which is not AI? There's another elephant. Let's call this the water buffalo in the room, shall we? In your view, what do most B2B tech companies in particular or agencies in general where do they go astray when it comes to their content marketing?
Yeah, I think there are two main problems, which is that they're not differentiated and they don't have a crusade, as my collaborator Paul Connecton likes to call it, or like a purpose that they're really excited about and that's motivating their content. So like I'm in ad tech, right? And like there are, you know, hundreds of tech companies that exist to help agencies and advertisers buy media across the internet. You know, it's very hard for even experts in the industry to tell you the difference between them. So The number one purpose of content needs to be, you know, whom are you for? What do you do that is different than what these other hundreds of companies do? Especially if you're not already one of the category leaders, because if you're not, why should anyone pay attention to you if you're all the same?
Well, that's true, but it's kind of easier said than done, isn't it, though? I mean, tell me, how would you help a client who came to you about this kind of thing? What was the first steps you would take?
Totally. So I think one way you can go is you can think about the tech or the product or the service, and you can say, is there something about what we're offering that is genuinely different or that we can lean on? Another way you can go is you can think very granularly about your audience, right? So for example, our marketing strategist, whom I mentioned a moment ago, Paul Connecton, he used to be the CMO of a media buying platform called Beeswax. And the way they differentiate themselves from the hundreds of other demand side platforms in the market is they said, we have this really like granular tech that if someone wanted just like the simplest media buying experience, they actually wouldn't like this. We are actually best for control freaks. And what I love about that example is like, you can tell, like if you say we are the company for control freaks, you're actually going to turn off the majority of your potential audience. But there's a minority of your audience, the people who are really data heavy and who are like, I want to get in there and see exactly what's going on and like find efficiencies and all that. Like you're going to call out to them, to like the brands and agencies with huge data teams, and they're going to be like, this is for me. So I think that's another way you can differentiate, is to think about, how is my audience different from all of the other companies out there trying to sell to brands and agencies?
Well, Joe, do you subscribe to the notion, apparently you do, that if you're trying to sell to or appeal to everyone, you basically appeal to no one, and in that regard. Do you think that's fairly true?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I'm a business owner myself. Like, I know you are too, right? Like, we understand that temptation completely. It's hard to decide, like, I'm going to turn off a large portion of my audience and really just go after, you know, a niche, because it feels like you're turning away money. But it's the only way with marketing. Like, otherwise, you're just going to get lost in the noise. How do you see that play out with your customers?
Well, I was actually going to ask you kind of a side alley question on that. But yeah, you know, I see that with my customers quite a bit, in that they come to me and let's say I had a health clinic and they were leaning towards just, they were basically functional medicine, holistic medicine. And they pretty well knew their niche, but they wanted to grow and get, they had people who were really into that, which is, there's a chunk here and there, but they wanted to go a little broader. And I said, well, you're going to have to broaden your service offering then a little bit. And you're going to have to kind of get away from this kind of crunchy granola thing that kind of scares off a lot of mainstream people. And so what we started doing was, I said, here's how we can differentiate you. What if we start creating content that demonstrates that you're not in opposition to mainstream medicine? However, you are a medicine that focuses on preventative medicine, whereas most mainstream medicine, it's commonly believed, is reactive to illness. It's like, well, we'll wait till you get obese to give you a diabetes drug that's going to cost so much money for the rest of your life, or, you know, it's that kind of thing, or we're going to wait until you need a knee replacement. Well, why aren't we doing things, you know, the 20 years earlier to exercise on? And they're like, oh wow. So they did that. And I got to tell you, Joe, this was pretty quick. And for them, they had within 4 months, they turned around and had 5 new patients who found them through the content we created.
Right.
That's a lot for a small clinic, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It reminds me of a few months ago, I was looking for a dentist in my neighborhood in Greenpoint, New York. And there are like 10 of them here, right, within, like, you know, a 1 mile radius of me. And there's one that, it wasn't necessarily what I was looking for, but I really admired the marketing, because it was like clear that they were like, we are the modern, like, made for millennials, like, yuppie dentist, right? And it's like, that, again, that might turn off 80% of people. Like, you might be like, I don't need this from my freaking dentist, right? but for people who are like, and this is like that kind of neighborhood, so they're in the right spot, right? Sure, it's like, yeah, a lot of like young people with disposable income, and they're like, we are for you. Like, if you want to go to the dentist and feel like you're in a modern apartment, we got that for you. And we'll play Netflix while you're getting your teeth, you know, fixed and all that. And it's smart.
Joe, and I know I'm drifting a little, if that's okay, from the topic, because you're an agency owner, and I think our agencies are pretty similar in size and all that. My strategy when I get a prospect who comes to me, and if I just don't feel like that we can do as good a job for them, or maybe it's a sector we just don't like to do. When I say don't like, I just mean it's not our sweet spot. I had to learn after 14 years in business that, you know, like we kind of alluded to earlier, you can't say yes to everything. You really can't. Mm-hmm. You can, but you're not going to be good at everything. And it's going to catch up to you and get your reputation. But how do you do that? Do you turn people away? And if so, do you have generally places you can point them to, or
yeah,
how do you do it?
Yeah, I would say one big reason we turn clients away is that they really need a marketing strategy, but they're not ready to pay for it. It's too, in essence, it's too early for them to pay for our services. So like, I was talking with an ad tech CEO founder last week, and we're going to talk again. I'm not sure whether it's too early yet, but it's like, it's very typical that prospects for me, they have never spent any money on marketing.
Yeah.
They might have like 10 customers, and they're like, what we need is more marketing. And I'm like, maybe that would be helpful. Or maybe you just are still in the founder-led sales networking hustle phase, and you need to like prove out this concept a little more. Because as you know, we can't really do marketing if we don't understand yet, like, what do your customers whom you already have like about the product? Because really, like, great marketing is reflecting back to future customers, like, what is resonating with current customers. So that's something I find a lot.
Yeah. And, you know, this is for another day, but I just, I had kind of a semi-expensive experiment this year where I actually engaged, don't laugh too hard. I engaged a lead gen firm. They blew me away with their presentation.
Yeah.
I researched them. I thought about it for 3 months and I thought, I'm going to give this a shot. I don't know if you've ever done that, how you feel about lead gen, but tell me, what would be after almost 9 months of them doing lead gen, what would you think would be like an average amount of qualified leads you'd get from a, just your opinion as an owner of an agency?
Well, I think this is the irony is that every one of these lead gen firms comes in and they're like, we will get you 30 qualified meetings a month. And I'm like, I mean, if I got 5 qualified meetings a month, like that would be fantastic.
Right.
You know, for like a small agency, right? Cause our deals are pretty big.
Right.
And yeah, so when they come in, I'll tell you that they say 30 and I'm like, if you could actually do 5, that would be awesome. But in my experience, having worked with these kinds of companies, it's more like 1, but I don't know. What did you find?
I'll make it easy for you here. After almost 9 months, I got 0 qualified leads.
Yeah.
0. And I had to virtually threaten to sue them to break the contract. And then I had a good friend, online friend on LinkedIn, Joel Freund, who I told him about it. He was on my show. He'll be coming up. And he just shook his head and said, he had a way of making me feel stupid without trying to. But anyway, I just wanted to say that. It's rare when I get an agency owner who's as open as you are and about the same size, so I just had to ask you about that.
Yeah,
you know, I just felt so stupid afterward.
I think, yeah, I totally get that, but it's completely reasonable to try it out once because you're getting these pitches every day, and you know, it's just natural to be like, hey, let's give it a go one time. What I would advise people to do is, if you want to do that, ideally find like a short-term contract, right? Like I tried a cold email vendor. And they were month to month. So that was really good because I could just pull the plug after 2 or 3 months if it wasn't working.
Well, see, and that's what I do with my contracts with clients too. So I do a minimum 3 months usually because they're set up and there's all this stuff and I'm not going to, and if they expect something in a month, forget it, you know? And then after that, it's month to month. And I'm like, if you're not happy and I'm not happy, we each reserve the right 30 days notice, we're out. And that really worked. And people are surprised by that because they're like, oh, PR, it's going to be a long retainer. All right. Enough about this, though. Let's go on from the water buffalo to the big elephant in the time we have here, the AI and marketing. So, Joe, I got to know what you think. Do you think marketers are just putting way too much stock in it, or do you see it as the evolution of marketing?
Yeah, I think it's mostly overblown for at least what we do for content marketing and PR. And I'll be a little spicy and say, I think there are a lot of hucksters who are like, this is my new thing. Like, I'm the generative AI guy. You will all fall behind because you're not doing what I'm doing. And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, having tried ChatGPT, like, I think it's mostly useful for education.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to, it's basically like better Google search, right? Like, I want to find out about this topic. Or like getting a start on something.
Yes.
Or like iterating, right? Like if you want to say, here's a headline, give me 10 more headlines. Like it could like give you something better or spark some ideas. But I think if you're doing like serious marketing writing, like you're ghostwriting for a CEO or you're, you know, writing like long form, thoughtful blog posts that actually offer something new that aren't just like copying other people's websites, then it's, you know, that's what ChatGPT does. Like it pumps out commodity content based on what else is out there. But what do you think?
And by the way, listeners, most of you know this, we record the whole season in chunks. Usually I typically am done recording halfway through the season and it goes, so sitting in the can now are no fewer than 4 or 5 different people. Joe, 2 of them probably kind of might fit your initial salty comment, but they're great people, but they are pinning a lot on AI. It's, and they're really owning. But see, I'm with you. One of them, I won't name him, but I like him. He's a good guy, and he's doing a lot of this. But he says, you know, we view ChatGPT, and generative AI in general, for in use in our agency as, we consider it like a junior associate who was maybe a B student, you know, or B minus student.
Yeah.
And I thought that's a great way to think of it, because just like you, Joe, I find the iterative side of it is great. I mean, when you're writing all day, like I frequently am, it's nice to be able to go, does this sentence suck? And then by, you know, after a while, it basically says, yes, Alex, it sucks. But it helps me out. Or organizing, like I know I'll say to myself, okay, look, for my health client, I want to write a post about don't use Dr. Google. Can you give me some touch points and an outline that I can kind of work from? And it not only does it usually pull together the thoughts I was already trying to figure out how to get in order, but it'll find new stuff that I can research and add to it. So I love it for that. But this idea that it's like a fire and forget surface to air missile, that's nuts. And if anybody out there, I don't believe I have to say this to our very well-educated listeners, but if you're using generative AI and like basically using first or barely polished second drafts of it with your clients, you're walking on a razor blade over a vat of lemonade, my friends.
Yeah. And I think if you're using generative AI to do like basic SEO blog posts, like fine, like AI might have a big impact on that area of marketing, because it might just kill it off. Like, yeah. I don't know. I'm not an SEO expert, so I'm not going to expound on that too much, but like the whole commodity content game, I don't think anyone really likes it, right? Like from a consumer perspective, it's not great to like have seven cookie cutter blog posts all saying the same thing, trying to game the search rankings. So if it sort of disrupts that space, then I think that's all the better. But if what you're really trying to do with content marketing and PR is have a differentiated point of view, offer something to your customers that your competitors aren't offering, have a purpose and have like a point of view on your industry, then I don't think ChatGPT can help too much with that. And if we take that analogy of it's like the B student, junior associate, like, why are we all freaking out about this then? Like, if you were like, would you see me at a conference and be like, oh my God, Joe, I've got to tell you about something. I just hired this B student, junior associate. Like, he's revolutionizing my business. Like, that's nonsense. So I think AI will have a bigger impact on this, like other things in my industry, like ad tech and martech, like, I don't know, permutations of ads, right? Like that's something where I think AI is already having a huge impact, like creative for ads, right? Where it's like swapping out one image for another or making the image blend in with what the publisher is doing. All of that I think is going to be really big. But in terms of long form content, I don't think so.
That's so refreshing, by the way, to hear that. And I'm going to steal that, Joe. But yeah, oh my God, yeah, the competitors just hired a kid right out of school. I don't know.
Yeah, a kid right out of school, and he's not even like top of his class. He's like middle of his class. Hot damn.
Hot damn. Oh, dude, I needed this. Thank you. So, Joe, let me ask you kind of a big picture question here. You know, to your mind and to the way you present it, can you paint a picture for us what a truly world-class content marketing and PR strategy or campaign or whatever? Just how should all that look to you?
Yeah, so the way I like to break it down is three stages: narrative differentiation, editorial planning, content creation. Like the big thing is that when a PR agency or content marketing agency starts its relationship with the client, the first thing to understand should be, what does this business do and where is it headed? And sometimes people are afraid to ask those questions because they think, oh, it's too basic, right? It's really not, because the reason they are hiring a PR or content marketing agency should be because they have ambitions that are different than whatever it is they're doing now, right? Like if you start working, like I just started working with an ad tech company that has on their homepage, like top of the homepage, that basically they do something for advertisers, right? Mm-hmm. And we're spending the first month doing strategy and we're finding out they actually want to focus on publishers now, right? So the way so many PR and content engagements start is you get in there, whether you're being hired full-time or you're an agency, and you just start pumping out content or pitches or press releases, whatever it is. And those are just going to reflect your research based on where the company has been. Rather, I think you need to be writing about where the company is going. So understanding that business strategy, of, you know, we want to reposition ourselves in the market this way, and we've historically catered to this audience, but now we're catering to this other audience. That's what's then going to inform the PR strategy of whom are you featuring in your content? Yeah. What is your perspective? What are the industry trends, and how are you going to weigh in on them? And it's only once you've figured out those narratives and that positioning that then you're going to say, okay, what are the channels? And how are we going to show up across those different channels? And then finally, you're going to create the content. But I think too many of us, and I've been guilty of this myself in the past, start with step three, which is like, all right, we want to show activity. So we're just going to get in there and start cranking out content.
That is 100%. But, you know, there's pressure, you know, you sign the contract and then what are you doing? You know, I'll do on a proposal, I'll do a timeline. And usually that first month I call it to get to know you, but some people get a little, you can tell they get a little nervous going, well, what is that? I'm like, well, you'll find out. But, you know, so that's part of the thing about courses, you know, as an agency owner, when you're doing proposals, I'm sorry to go back to proposals, but is manage those expectations, make sure they understand your process. You said something on your site. I'm going to call your attention to it. It's misspelled. No, I'm kidding. It's not misspelled, Joe. It's fine. It says, you say this though, why sharp pen? Most content marketing and PR agencies do not produce thought leadership and do little to distinguish their clients. We help our clients become their customers' only option through a bespoke three-step process of narrative building, editorial planning, and content creation executed by CMOs, journalists, veteran content strategists, and world-class writers and editors. Have you ever in the site, you know, the client sales cycle, does that come up with clients, and how do they react to that? And do they ask questions about it, or are they pretty clear with it? Is that a weird question?
No, not at all. I mean, first I wish my clients read my site as carefully as you did. but I think there are a couple pieces there that I would underscore. One is that I always advise people, whether I'm working with them or not. Like often I'll talk to early stage CEO founders and they're like, they want to know, you know, what's this whole PR thing about? Is it all BS? Like, you know, how do I pick a good agency? And what I always tell them is look at who's on the account team, because agencies will always come in hot with like, we have all this experience and whatever. But then you look at the account team and it's like one mid-level person and like three junior people, right? And they're just trying to make you feel like they're busy. So I think that's the first thing is like, when I say we have all of those people, like, we have, you know, three times CMOs in our industry who work with us and work with our clients. They don't work with all of our clients. It depends on the engagement and what the client wants and frankly, what they want to pay for. But like we can supply that and we do. So I think it's like, it's about the agency and the client coming together on like, what do we really need here?
Yeah.
And then like, what's feasible. But the big thing is that you both in terms of the personnel and the process, which is that three-stage process to which I referred, you need to have a strategy. You can't just start pumping out content, right, which is also what the Gen AI thing is about, right? Like generative AI is tactical, and people in marketing get too excited about tactics, and it's often dictated by clients because clients, again, as you said, they want to see that you're doing something, right? And to them, doing something often means like you're sending out the press release, you're writing the blog post. But you'll really get a lot further if you first figure out like, where is this company headed and how is communications going to support that?
Right. Okay. Well, as a faithful reader of your website, I'm looking at your team. You guys are all, I'm sorry, I'm older than you. It's obvious. I mean, well, it's not obvious. I'm a damn fine looking man.
You do have more hair than I do.
You know, I do. Wait, is the tube on straight? Okay, good. but you have a fine beard, my friend. But you all look pretty young to me in the sense that you're all, are you all millennials basically or ish?
Yeah, we have a couple Gen Xers.
That like that's funny.
Where I think we bring in some older folks is, and now you're making me sound like the bratty millennial.
You fell into my trap.
Is for the strategy stuff. So again, right, that CMO I mentioned. And then for select clients, we'll bring in like really experienced business writers, like people who have like done content for BCG and McKinsey. Or like we have a collaborator who's really well known in ad tech who like used to be a Wall Street Journal reporter. So we bring in people where helpful.
Yeah, and I noticed also you've got the Ivy League's well represented here. You've got some really sharp folks there. But I have to do this because I write books and mystery novels and stuff. You have a PhD in comparative literature from Cornell.
Yeah, so I was an academic and a journalist before I started the agency. I was freelancing as a journalist in ad tech and martech for many years, actually from college onward, and I got this really good opportunity in retrospect, which was that I was doing my PhD and that, so I sort of, you know, I was on a stipend, I had an annual income, I had health insurance, and that allowed me, that sort of is what led me to entrepreneurship, because I think I'm not like a super pro risk person. I'm careful. I'm like comfortable with some level of risk, but I don't think I would have done the like, I graduated from college or I had a job and now I'm quitting it and starting from zero and trying to like start an agency. I think having that, like doing my degree and earning a living that way, so I had a baseline, and then like freelancing and trying to find clients, gave me the runway to start a business in a way that I probably wouldn't have. And I don't know about you, but I also advise people to try to do the same thing. Like, it's much better to start an agency if you can sort of have one or two freelance clients while you still have a full-time gig than if you are just starting from scratch and have nothing and then, you know, need to pay the bills.
So I did it. I mean, I bootstrapped it, but I had stuff in a row ready to go. I think what I was going with your question too, though, is just, you know, I'm a big believer. Okay, I have a liberal arts degree. So I'm a state school, but I'm from a liberal arts degree. But I'm just teasing you. You know that, right? But I'm just saying, though, that I think that I often call it the cocktail party degree, because you know a little bit about a lot of things and you develop a mindset where you're learning about a lot of things, which I have found invaluable in my career, not just since the past 14 years in my business, but the prior 20 plus where I was in corporate America and all that. It just seemed to create a questing attitude and an interest in learning a little bit about a lot, which has helped me not only sign clients, but then do, I think, more creative work for them. So I guess my question, that's why I was originally going with this, Joe, was, do you think that this helped you too? It can't hurt, but what do you think?
I thought you were just waging generational warfare.
I am doing that as well, by the way.
Yeah, I think it helps. You know, it's really interesting, Alex, because I've hired like a dozen people, not all as full-time, like a lot of contractors who have that same background. And I can say, like, it's not binary. It's not like, oh, it always works and you're better off. Because I've hired people of traditional marketing backgrounds who don't have that like really robust liberal arts background. And I've hired people who have no marketing experience and are just like, from their credentials, seem to be really strong writers and thinkers. And I wouldn't say that either is like the definitive better scenario. Mm-hmm. I do think that those people who are really critical thinkers and great writers, like they might have been fiction writers or literary critics or journalists, they tend to have a really high ceiling for just like the writing quality. Like if you can get them read up on the marketing stuff and on like to learn how to do business writing, they can write like, you know, manifesto level marketing stuff that's just like really, really cool and unlike the like most of what you're going to see on like a blog. But there is the challenge too of like, you know, not all of those people are going to be comfortable writing for a business audience and like learning about the marketing stuff that you also need to know to do a good job in our industry.
Yeah, I think I've had to pull myself back. Some of my creative impulses don't go over as well with the more straight-laced clients. But I'd rather be pulled back than to be stuck in the mud. That's how I always view it. And I tell clients when they hire me, I say, look, you're going to get some stuff that might even read outright goofy. I don't care. I, I, I have pride in pen here. Don't get me wrong, but I just have to make sure the clients don't get so wrapped up in, well, he's the guy. Okay. But if this does not fit your tone of voice, if I've gone a little too far off the reservation, you need to say so. But I'd rather pull people back than push them forward.
And it's difficult because a lot of that distinction, I think, between the like really incredible writers and like competent writers is like a voice thing. And it's like a, you know it when you see it thing. And quite frankly, like that doesn't like sell a lot of business, because like business people, unless they have that background, like they're not going to be won over by that idea of like, oh, this writer, like you're going to see their voice is like incredible and it's going to command your customer's attention, whatever. I think there's truth to that, but it's more ethereal. So I think you do need all of it. You know, you need someone who like understands the business context, understands the industry, and is a really solid writer. And the reality that we all know, whether you're an in-house or agency marketer, is when you have a writer, you're sort of evaluating them on all three of those criteria and figuring out how it all stacks up.
Joe, this has flown by. I just really enjoy speaking with you. But let me, before we go, though, who are you guys looking for at Sharp Pen? Who could best benefit from working with you guys?
Yeah, we're looking for ad tech, martech, and data companies. Our clients are usually one of two personas. Either you're sort of early on, or you're doing a rebuild and you need a marketing strategy, in which case we help with that. Or you just need a content partner who, you know, your team's really busy, you have a strategy, but you need some bandwidth extension and some ideas.
Joe Zappa is the brain behind Sharp Pen Media, which emphasizes narrative building, editorial planning, and effective content creation, as well as what he just said. If you're one of those personas, you ought to consider getting in touch with this guy. He is in all the usual suspects. He's got a website. He's got all that stuff. And guess what? You do not have to get off the treadmill or stop the car in the middle of traffic. It's all at PRAfterHours.com or in your show notes. There'll be a link there, or two or four. He's got a lot of links, but we're going to put them all in because he went to the trouble of giving them to me. Joe Zappa, I've enjoyed meeting you so terribly much. And you know what? Doors always open here in the virtual lounge.
Thanks so much, Alex. I really enjoyed it.
Is your story reaching the right ears? Or is it just another whisper in the wind? In the symphony of the marketplace, your narrative should sing. Alex Greenwood, a maestro of messaging with over three decades of expertise, is ready to conduct your story to new heights. From navigating the nuances of public relations, to authoring novels that capture the imagination and producing podcasts that speak volumes, Alex crafts narratives that resonate and yield results. Turn the page to a new chapter. Let Alex Greenwood orchestrate your story to captivate, engage, and inspire. Step into the spotlight. Visit alexgpr.com or contact him through this podcast today, and let's start a conversation that matters.
You know what that means? It's last call here at the Virtual Lounge. Be sure to visit PRAfterHours.com for links to what we discussed in this episode and more. Be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And join us next time for another round at PR After Hours with Alex Greenwood.